anybody ready? Okay, I'd like to call to welcome you to the Wednesday, January 17th, 2018 meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. May we have a roll call, please?
Chair Linda Austin?
Here.
Director Nichols?
Here.
Director Brown?
Here. It may be on touch it and see if it's...
Okay, if everybody please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Your mics are on.
Mine is.
There.
Okay, we'll have agenda review. Is there anybody want to make any changes to the agenda? Everything
no.
Okay? All right, that brings us to public comment for items that are not on the agenda. If anyone wants to speak to something not on the agenda, now's your turn.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and again, I will be bringing... Well, you're kind of all new to my issues. You haven't been here. I've been repeating now four items that I've asked the board to look into or take action on. The first is to rescind the censure of Mayor Jim Hill. The censure was brought about by trumped-up charges that were all never proven. The second is an investigation into Mayor Scholes. Mayor Scholes, on the other hand, admits wrongdoing, and there should be an investigation into his behavior as a board member with regard to personnel matters. Another question that I raise, and I'd like to see your board agendize, is expanding the board. This conversation has not been had by your community, by your three communities. This was a recommendation in a 1984 grand jury report for this district. And no action has been taken, only to have legal counsel look into it. Last I saw, it was Mike Seitz looked into it. The effort to expand the board would simply need special legislation. Those are scary words if you don't know what special legislation is, but they're not scary. It isn't scary. All you need to do is ask your legislator to carry the action forward. And who would object if your board was in agreement? So my concern is if you continue to resist having a community conversation about this, the electorate can force you to have a community conversation. They can have a ballot measure and force you to a different makeup. So I think it's healthier for you to have that conversation, and I encourage you to agendize it. My last question that I am repeating, and I have correspondence that I've written to all of you and shared, I asked a question about Wendy Stockton's participation in the Wallace legal matter. She has been attending the court hearings and charging this district. My own investigation, and in an email conversation with District Attorney Dan Dow, is that there is no need for her to be there. So I would like those expenses explored and an explanation as to why she is attending, and I'd actually like that to stop.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon, and I would just like to remind the board that when there's policy making or decisions made, that you follow the direction and wishes of the ratepayers. And if they're a non-ratepayer, then So be it, you can listen, but you really are obligated to the ratepayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Shirley.
Patricia Price, Arroyo Grande. I also wanted to ask you to rescind the censure of Mayor Hill. He was not provided an opportunity to answer the allegations by the investigator. When he did respond to them, it was a little late because the decision had already been made. I think it is unfair to have that cloud over his name. I also would like to ask that Mayor Schultz be investigated. He not only has said on tape that he did meddle in personnel issues, he actually has violated the Brown Act on tape. At the last meeting in Grover Beach. And I also would like to know why Wendy is or was attending the Wallace investigations or trials, whatever. And I would like to ask someone on this board to ask legal why. I'd like the answer tonight. I'm tired of asking questions and not having someone on the board ask for an answer of staff. That can be done. I know there's no back and forth, but staff or the board can ask staff to explain things. I know they can do that.
Hello, Colin Kubel. Just wanted to bring up the subject I brought up at the last meeting also. Two of you weren't here. Three of you weren't here. I believe that we need to look at the way that it's structured, this board is structured, and how it votes for chair and vice chair. If you have a three-person board, it is not fair when two members of the board vote against usually the third member 99% of the time, or close to that, for the board to choose their own chair. It should be a strictly rotation, city by city by city, and that should be the standard for how the chair and vice chair are chosen. It should not be up to the board, because you can bypass one person on that board over and over and over again when you have the majority. That is not the fair way to do that. That's not the diplomatic or the democracy. And so I really believe that this board needs to look at the way that they rotate the chair and the vice chair. Thank you.
Chris Victorine, and I'd like to call to your attention the bylaws. I want to also make, I really appreciate that the bylaws were included in this board packet to be reviewed in the next board meeting. That's very helpful to have a little bit more time. But I want to call your attention on paragraph 6.2. It says, members of the board of directors shall exercise their independent judgment on behalf of the interests of the entire district, including the residents, the property owners, and the public as a whole, which means that when it comes to public comments and a participation with the board, that the public as a whole is welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mary Lucy Oceano. First of all, I'd like to say it's nice to see Miss Austin back at the dais. I wanted to bring to the attention, once again, the tax rolls. All of us have recently paid our property taxes. And this board made a decision a year ago, or maybe 2 years ago, with Mr. Hill from Arroyo Grande making the motion to attach Oceano's sewer fees to our property taxes. Mr. Scholes seconded that motion. Oceano voted adamantly against that motion. So a lot of people in the community are right now wondering why our taxes have gone up $350, $400 per payment, which is truly unfair. At that time, the argument was given that if we put all three of the member agencies on the tax rolls, it would minimize the operating cash available. Take a look at your budget. It's time to move those two cities over. If Oceano has to eat the bullet twice a year, each household being hurt, I think everybody needs to feel the pain. This is a mutual agreement. Prop 218 funds were also put in place where there would be two incremental increases, and the community was led to believe that that would be for reclamation and water, you know, and upgrading the plant and a couple of other projects. A lot of us are asking where those rate increase monies went. I see that the households got the biggest hit, nonprofits got the least hit, and other scales. But where did those funds go? Because to date, you've settled three settlements, one with Mr. Clemens, which Mr. Hill, your other board member, graciously talked about closed session items last time. Many of us didn't know the arrangement with the contract with the employee, and your director, the one who was censured, broke your bylaws and spoke of closed session items, how funds are to be released, how much funds were released. And so censuring that director might have been a good idea. Unfortunately, you can censure somebody all you want. They're not going to follow the bylaws. They're not going to follow the bylaws. You just have a rogue board member. So what was very disappointing is that staff did not stop it. Just like when he attacked somebody from the community, calling them a blatant racist, the staff did not put that director in check.
Thank you.
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. Boy, the last thing I ever wanted to talk about at a meeting would be the minutes of the meeting. I spoke at the last meeting. Find anywhere in those meetings, in those minutes, that my name was mentioned or what I said. The minutes were sloppy. It needs to be corrected, please.
Anyone else?
Ron Holt, Arroyo Grande. Let's see. I had originally intended to address one thing, but I now have a couple others on the item. In regard to Mr. Hill, I think that Ms. Lucy's comments are a little bit distorted, but that's for you to decide, I guess. I do think that he did get reamed on the investigation. I think it was a huge waste of money, that most of the, almost all, but maybe one of those accusations against him were false, and he didn't get the chance to address that before you took your report and ran with it. And I've heard many times at the start of the meeting, people talk about getting more civility. As long as we're at loggerheads about personalities, I don't see that's going to change. And I would like to see maybe some kind of a compromise on this. If you're not going to withdraw the censure or apologize to Mr. Hill, maybe instead put him in the chairman's seat as a way of, as a gesture of trying to get something a little bit more of a compromise on this subject. And while I agree that Mr. Scholes has probably done more than Mr. Hill as far as deserving of censorship, I don't see spending the money to do that as a worthwhile thing considering where we're at right now. That's the subject that I had mainly intended to address this evening. And I do want to also endorse Mrs. Tacker's point about the about the expanding the board. I think it needs to be looked into. I think we need to address it. We don't know how much trouble, how much cost it will be until we actually check it out, and I don't see a reason why we can't do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll go back to our agenda.
Madam Chair, I have a question for staff, if I could, based on public comment.
Certainly.
I'm just curious, because I'm filling in, what is the theory behind having legal staff observing other legal proceedings in another jurisdiction? I'm just trying to figure out why that's happening.
Good evening, board members, Chair. Information that is confidential and disclosed in closed session, I'm unable to repeat it in open session. I can assure the board and the public that the full board is fully aware of our participation in all matters.
So there was some reasoning behind this, the expenditure of those funds?
It was authorized.
Okay, and then the next question is, does that authorization include going to Santa Barbara if the case got moved to Santa Barbara?
I can't answer that.
So how's the public going to know whether or not? There has to be some way of describing whether it's going to continue or not. That's not a closed session.
I mean, the board could give us direction to give a public report if that's what the board majority would like to do.
Okay, well, I would just suggest at some point you may, just for the, I'm not asking you to divulge what goes on in closed session, but there's got to be some amount of information that the public can be given as to, generally speaking, why there's somebody there. Because it's an expense, and it's a rather large expense. And so I think it's a reasonable request. Again, I'm not trying to get you to disclose something that you don't believe you can disclose, but we can find creative ways to, in some method, show the public, you know, that there's a method to why we're doing what we're doing. So that's my only question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Okay, we'll go to the consent agenda. And I would like to do each item separately. Everybody?
That's fine.
Agree?
Okay. That's fine.
So the first item will be the approval of the warrants. Do we have any public comment on the warrants?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And I see the items associated with the retirees. Each retiree is getting their medical benefits paid, including Mr. Huebner. I know that there was some consternation over the formula for the retirees, and I wonder if that has been worked out with them or if we're still going to bring something back for the board to look at and remedy that. I'm more comfortable with the legal counsel bills. Mr. Trujillo for the month of December is $5,000. Wendy Stockton is at $3,000. I'd like to see a combination of those two hover right around $6,000. I think we're still a little too high. With regard to the payroll, and I believe that was the discussion, I know that was the discussion that Ms. Lucy was referring to a few moments ago, in that Mr. Hill was talking about Mr. Clemens' settlement. Mr. Clemens' settlement is entirely public record. I have a copy, and she can get a copy from the district. So no closed session item was disclosed at the last board meeting by Mayor Hill. The question that was raised, and I'm really merely following up on it, is how it pertains to the payroll when it's a settlement and it's not exactly a salary. He could never have imagined that there would be a separation agreement and a settlement in his employment contract. So that came about after the fact and should not be itemized or tallied as wages. So those are my comments on the warrants. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, seeing none, does anybody here have
any? No questions.
No questions? No. Barbara?
No, I don't. In fact, I was pleased to see that legal is not too high. The equipment rental kind of raises a flag for me.
Equipment rental.
$23,750.
We are renting a centrifuge right now for $15,000 a month. That's the lion's share.
Why is that being rented?
When we cleaned the digester out, we had a significant loading that was beyond the capacity of our existing centrifuge. Our existing centrifuge is also in a rehabilitation mode, and we don't want to wear out the new one until we are completed with that project. So we kept it on to preserve the life of our older centrifuge.
Thank
and
you.
We are rebuilding that one. And there's an auger that goes along with it that's also being rebuilt. And we're building a slab to dump the discharge onto. That's not in that budget. It's in another one.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Can I get a motion?
I move for approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's been moved and seconded and approved. The warrants have been approved. Okay, now I wanted to talk about the minutes, January 3rd. And I think what's been, you know, I know we've been going back and forth on these minutes, whether if enough is being said, what people said, and it's been going on for months. And I think at a meeting a few months ago, we decided it would be action summary minutes. And then some people didn't like the action summary and gave direction to add a little more. So we're going back and forth, and I want to get it straight as what kind of minutes we're actually doing. Are they action summary, or are they going to be verbatim minutes? And if, because what we have here from these last minutes, they're called action summary, but if you look through them, you've got like here where we were talking about action 6A, the officers, you know, acting chair White opened the public. Julie Tacker stated she ripped. Shirley Gibson stated she supports the Oceano representative. But that's not verbatim. She also stated that there was a person that spoke before her that was not a member of the community who's ran up $11,000 in legal bills for us. So if we're going to put everything people say, we either put it all or don't put any of it. And Ron Arnoldson stated that he does not support Linda Austin as the chair. Well, I watched the meeting, and he didn't state that he didn't support me as the chair. He stated that I'm so tied to John Scholes that if he moves, I would break my neck. So if we're going to write what people say, let's write it down, okay? And this down here on 6B, Julie Tacker gave a big opinion on the loan thing. And this is an opinion. There's no fact base. And if we're going to do action summary, it should just say she spoke on that thing. Talking about Oceano, I don't know where she thinks that this is what she believes, that Oceano. So down the road, someone looks at these and says, oh, Oceano would have to be retrofitted to qualify. Well, that's, you know, but we don't know that. I'm saying it's not fact-based, and it's a slant to Oceano, as usual.
You mind if I comment? Or you
let me finish.
Okay, I thought you were.
And then, you know, it's like they're edited. Brad Snook commented on the regulations and the brine, but he also commented on the fines and the water, and that's not in there. So I just So what are we going to do? I want to know, are we going to do action summary or are we going to do verbatim? Like here, we have here, these are in the minutes on closed session. Ron Arnolson commented on a previous commenter's comment about missing money. What missing money? Where? Shouldn't we have, someone's going to go, well, there was missing money here? We need to be more, say what, who said what about, and we all know there was no missing money. And so I just like to have a little discussion, a future meeting to discuss, and yeah.
If I could?
Sure.
I know in Arroyo Grande, part of the reason we narrowed down our minutes was that it was time-consuming in terms of getting the full amount of minutes. And yet, when I hear that Ms. Welsh didn't get even put added, it tells me
and her name wasn't. She wasn't even in the minutes.
So the action. Excuse me. Just wait your turn, okay? If you would. It's hard to talk when I hear background noise. Thank you.
Okay.
We have the tape as backup for what was actually said. So I think in terms of, I don't know how much staff time it would take to do full minutes. But I think the theory behind action minutes is a good idea as long as they're narrow and they're also accurate. They have to be accurate. If they're not accurate, they're not worth the paper they're written on. So
I know we're going to be discussing the bylaws, and I think that's one thing we can do on the next meeting is set it as the policy. I know it doesn't quite actually say that in it now, but we can change that and make it.
Yeah,
because Oceano, that's the way we do it, and it's just bam. It just says, this person commented, and if you want to know what they said, go to the...
Minutes are supposed to be helpful and informational, and if the information is incorrect or poorly written, it defeats the whole purpose. So, I'm all for action minutes if they're accurate, but if they're not accurate, then we have to go to some other methodology, I guess, but I think they can be accurate, and I think they can be action minutes, and people can be referred to the tape. I think that spending a lot of staff time on verbatim minutes when, in fact, we have the tape, it seems to be duplicative in my mind.
I agree with that to the extent that action summaries, how brief are they going to be? Are they going to be for every single person that speaks during a meeting? And include just the crux of what they're saying. Is that the idea?
That's the idea. Okay. Like you'll say on for the chair here where they had all these comments, it could just say each person's name commented on on that. And then, and if you're not going to say that, then you need to say, don't just say whatever all they said, but I firmly believe in the action summary. It works fine everywhere. OCSD does, it works wonderful there. And I think that's what we should do here. Maybe at our next.
Yeah, I would just say, given the concerns about the accuracy of these current minutes, I know you've been bouncing them back and forth, but I honestly don't think we should prove something that we all know isn't somewhat more accurate.
I think we should have them come back next week. In 2 weeks. So
I
we can
too.
Just table these minutes.
I do too.
Till the next meeting.
I do too.
Okay, public comment.
So Patty Welsh was not at the last meeting. Patty Welsh was at the December meeting, and she is mentioned in those minutes. So there's no error there. The mistake is hers in that she was not at this meeting 2 weeks ago. With regard to what you're concerned with, action minutes, action summary, or verbatim, this discussion is a side effect of the fact that you have been flip-flopping who is representing this board. Absolutely. Linda says she wants it one way. Karen says she wants it another way. The last time this was discussed was that we would expand to include the gist of the comments, and that was agreed upon by the board, and that there would be any for or against should there be a side to be taken to each issue. As far as I don't see any quotation marks around any of this to say that there's verbatim even in here. If you want verbatim, there would be quotation marks. That's how that is
represented. My concern with these minutes is really what's the follow-up. There was not a cash report in the last meeting, board packet 2 weeks ago. There's not a cash report in this meeting. And there is missing money, Ms. Austin. The $800,000 question that began a few months ago by Mr. Hill has not been thoroughly answered. A portion of it has been explained, but if there is a mathematical formula that is being carried on forward from 2017 in July, that money has not been explained. So there needs to be a thorough explanation on the missing money. Nobody took it. It's just not been shown because we don't have cash reports anymore. So I think we could track it if we had the cash reports. Thank you for your time.
Anyone else?
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. I think we've wasted a lot of time discussing minutes and who said what for several months. I would like to just go to the basic so-and-so spoke. Somebody can go to the tape if they have a question. It's just not worth going over this every single meeting about this person said that, they didn't say this. I think just let it go and save time. You have the tapes. Thank you.
Thank you, Shirley.
Yeah, Mary Lucy, I agree with what Shirley just said. Plus, if you just go to so-and-so spoke in favor of the motion, so-and-so spoke opposed to the motion, and if somebody's really interested in that person's opinion, then I'll go pull a tape and listen to what they had to say. You run the risk, when you summarize them, you run the risk a person who is taking the minutes, their personality is being reflected in the minutes. So I really think it should be they spoke in favor, they spoke opposed, end of story.
Thank you. Is that it for the public comment? So again, what Ms. Tacker said is my point, that we need to stop back and forth, and make the decision, put it in the bylaws, and stick to it. And there were accusations of people taking money by people from your group, so don't tell me there wasn't, because I remember correctly. Okay, so we're done with that. Let's go on to the election of the calendar year 2008 board officers. Do you have a staff report on that?
The last meeting of the year is the scheduled meeting, board members, and that meeting was canceled. The first meeting of the year, there was not an ability on the board to gain a majority for any nomination, and that brings it to today's meeting, the second meeting of the year, and we suggest that you elect officers, a chair and a vice chair at this time.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment? Do I do something else? I'm not asking you. What do we discuss this first? Do we make our...
No.
So public comment, please, if anyone has any public comment.
Well, I'm not going to be real organized about this. I want to say, I'm going to paraphrase what Director Hill said last time. For the last 2 years, the apparent overriding goal of this district has been to remove the chief plant operator and penalize other staff member that was in the relationship that they were being called on. The chair, Scholes, engaged and apparently encouraged Mr. Huebner's tactic of bringing countless unfounded investigations that proved several things. You can waste $500,000 apparently on the chair's unilateral approval without obtaining concurrence of the board in fruitless and obscene legal related charges. And unscrupulous outside legal contractors, absent any oversight here, are more interested in billing than recommending mediation and other approaches to solving the problems. The public kept saying, Huebner needs to be reined in. And this board, the majority of the board, refused to back us up. We've lost a very experienced plant supervisor, and our district is in disarray. And I don't see any end to that. When Jim Hill was the chair, things ran very well. He's better qualified to be the chair than anybody else that is on the board. He's an engineer. He understands budgets. He showed that when he showed that there was money not being accounted for or missing. He's a lawyer. He's trained as a lawyer. When he was chair, things ran smoothly. Now, when Schultz came on as chair, things started falling apart. We got Huebner, and he backed him at every turn, along with Oceano. And
thank you. Your time's up.
I just think that we need I think that we need to get a chair that
anyone
knows
else
what
wants to talk? Anyone else want a public comment?
You didn't allow other people to go on. You allowed other people to go on.
Oh, I didn't.
I saw you turn on the light with one person until they were out.
I did not.
I watched it.
That's why I'm standing up here.
That is not true. I was over here. I didn't turn it on, is what I happened. Don't assume what I'm doing.
I saw it.
And I let everybody talk 3 minutes. I stopped everybody, so stop it.
I can't believe this board. I can't believe this board. I can't believe the attitudes. I can't believe anything else that's going on here. And you all have your own reasons for doing that. I'm not up here to criticize anything, but what you have just displayed is what's wrong with this board. And it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed now. And the person who is the chair, who is going to be elected non-democratically, and I'm going to say that again because it is not democratic, okay? And so until you get to a five-member board, which two of you do not want, we already know that. We already know what the prediction is of what this election is going to be. All of us out here know that, okay? So we have history here. And so all I'm saying is the attitude that just came out of this board should never happen in a meeting like this. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Shirley Gibson Halcyon, and I support Director Austin as chair. And I'd like to remind the board that Mayor Hill was requested to step aside from the OCSD by his own city council. So I think that kind of says it all. So thank you.
Anyone else?
Julie Tacker and I do support the chair going to Mayor Hill. Mayor Hill is an engineer. Mayor Hill has more experience on this board than anyone else. He has a better grasp
of what's going on at the plant, how a plant functions, the biology, the mechanics, all of it. He has an incredible...
Extra time now, see? Go ahead, I'm sorry. I'm giving you extra time because I don't need extra time.
I just need everyone to be respectful.
Right, just because I don't...
That's all I need.
Got it, Julie. Thank you.
Okay? So he has an incredible grasp of regulatory matters. After 38 years working at Diablo Canyon, there is no more regulated industry than nuclear power. So he understands that. His main concern for this district has been and always has been safety compliance and the safety of our staff, your staff. He has an incredible grasp of financial matters. He has worked through the numbers at the Sanitation District, Arroyo Grande, Oceano, his own finances. He is conscientious and respectful for the people's money. He does have a Juris Doctorate in, so he has... Excuse me? I'm sorry?
Can you direct comments?
Up here, Julie, if you want to talk,
he
talk
has
here.
A law degree, Ms. Lucy. He has a law degree, and I legally can say that because he has one. I am concerned over the behavior that I just saw between the two of you. I don't think you needed to snap it, Mr. Brown. Now you're interrupting me, Linda.
Speak.
Let me finish my time. So it is, I'm concerned about your behavior. It's very unprofessional what you've just done. And if you want to be the chair, I think you need an attitude check. I am also appreciative that the bylaws are attached to tonight's board packet. It's nice to have them handy. The FPPC regulations relating in interest to real property have recently been changed. If the real property in which the director has an interest is located within 500 feet of the boundaries of the property affected by a decision, that interest is now deemed directly involved in the decision. That is 13.1 in the bylaws. And it's codified in the government code through the Fair Political Practices Commission, in that if you are within 500 feet or your property is within 500 feet of the plant, you cannot vote on improvements at the plant. I believe, you may let the record reflect, I believe, because I cannot confirm it, but I believe Ms. Austin may be conflicted from voting on many, many matters within the district due to her property ownership.
Four minutes, and that's not...
Thank you so much.
And as for the outburst, I apologize for that, but I want to say that I have been very careful to do this at the 3 minutes. One time somebody had talked for a long time, and I went and I hit it for the 3 minutes, so they even got longer. So I don't appreciate being interrupted by a board member here to me when I know what I'm doing here, and I'm doing everything fair is the way I try to do it. It's my first time doing here. So I'm sorry about what happened earlier. It's not my normal way, but it's just the tone of this meeting is the last few months have driven me to that, I guess. So anyway, I apologize. And if we can go, do we get a motion? If that is it for public comment?
Patty Welsh, Royal Grand. I would like anybody but Jim Hill to be chair. One of the reasons I say that is Jim Hill, when he sat on the board of OCSD and abruptly walked off, he could have, as a citizen, stayed involved with the district and seen things to the end. He did not do that. So his concern for the district concerns me, whether or not he's going to have the votes not go his way time and time again. Is he going to get up and walk off the board like he did in Oceana?
Thank you.
Mary Lucy Oceano. Ms. Austin, I don't think you have to apologize for taking the floor back. Mr. Brown has a long history of taking the floor from women. That's how he does it. He slanders people from the podium a lot of times. I would strongly encourage anybody but Director Hill, and tell Mr. Hill, can learn to, one, follow his own bylaws, policies, and procedures. You have a recently censured board member. And still, last meeting, he attacked people from the audience, myself included. I am one of his regular targets, calling me a racist because I didn't think it was appropriate that a supervisor was dating the secretary that he was supervising. You know, so until those twisted stories, until that director can get on board and work as a coalition and not disrespect people from the public, I can see, I don't see you having any other choice for the people. You know, we need a facilitator. We don't really, you know, we have, $15,000 a month engineers to tell us what screw needs to be screwed in and which one doesn't. The chair really has to facilitate the public, has to make it feel like the public has having some input into a process. They have to have those type of personalities. Mr. Hill has not demonstrated an approachable personality, whether it's in neighboring communities or if it's in his own neighborhood. It's just not there. So I would strongly encourage anybody but Director Hill.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Chris Victorine. I'm here to support Director Hill as chair for the coming year. The past 2 years has seen a decline in district operations and financial position. Multiple ongoing investigations have seen legal costs skyrocket. The 2015-16 financial audit is 2 years behind, and the 2016-17 audit is overdue. You, as the board, have a number of fiscal responsibilities, establishing financial goals, reviewing district finances, and holding the district accountable on behalf of your constituents. Over the last year, I have only seen evidence of Director Hill carrying out those responsibilities. As representatives of Grover Beach and Oceano, you appear to rubber stamp warrants and budget documents without adequate review and asking few questions. When $800,000 was unaccounted for in a financial review, neither of you seemed to be aware of the discrepancy, or think it was important to ask for an explanation. Oversight is the fiscal responsibility of the entire board. Only Director Hill was concerned and took the time to do the math. You continually, like clockwork, override any attempt that Director Hill makes to scrutinize and question costs and accounting data. You seem to have forgotten that you serve your constituents, not your own personal agendas. I request, as a ratepayer, that you promptly research the required actions it will take to have a 5-member board serve our communities. I have little confidence that any change will occur if the Grover Beach or Oceano representative is elected chair. As a ratepayer, I want full representation from the board, and Director Hill is the best fit to serve our communities as chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back. And now if I could entertain a motion or nomination for chair. Someone would like to make a nomination?
Actually, I would like to make a motion that this be put off to the next meeting when the regular board members are all here, when this information that is flying around here has been disseminated to all the board members, till the board members have come to an agreement among themselves to be civil and work together.
I would second that motion.
Okay, well, I guess, yeah, that's fine with me. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so the next thing on the agenda would be the consideration of a proposal for the financial plan update. And Paul, I think you were going to start that.
Yes, thank you, directors. We have with us tonight Alex Handler with the Bartle Wells Group, who are going to, if approved by the board, update our financial plan. We have asked them to do that, and the board authorized our proceeding with this process when the report was made by Kennedy Jenks regarding the redundancy project, and the process became of interest to the board when they were told that the redundancy project costs have now climbed by an additional $4 million. We have with us Mr. Handler, and I'll introduce him at this point, and he can proceed unless you have questions about
anything. I do. I could.
Yes, sir.
Just two questions, and maybe that gentleman will answer one of them, but it seems to be to put the cart before the horse when we have two audits that need to get done. How can we do good financial planning if we don't even know where our books stand at this point? It seems to me that it's backwards. Can you comment on that?
I don't have anything to say about that. The audit is not here because we don't all want the audit.
So the audit's not done, so we're going forward with financial planning's not having done audits that are going to be required if we get bank loans. The banks will not loan us money if the audits aren't done.
That's correct.
So I think that's where my concern lies, is that if we don't do the audits, we're doing financial planning in a vacuum. We should have that information first. So I'll leave it at that if you don't want to comment, but it seems to me like it's backwards. The other question I had is, this number from 20 to 24 million, I heard that number myself as well. And I don't understand over a two-year period, because that's, I think, a jump of like 20% if I did my math correctly, where that jump comes from in a two-year period.
Well, the original estimate, I believe, was done, Director, that when the redundancies were originally brought to you, which was about 4 years ago, and whether 4 years or 2 years is enough time to accumulate that kind of a percentage of increase in costs, it sounds outrageous. But that is our best estimate of what we think it's going to cost. And we would like to proceed with reviewing our analysis of the finances to make sure that the money is available. The audit will come, and all of that has to be completed before we go to bond anyway. Again, we want that audit as badly as you do.
Thank you for that. Those are my questions, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Are you ready to give your report?
Mr. Handler.
Mr. Handler.
Sure. Bartle Wells.
Yeah, I don't know if I had any pre-planned statement to make, but I will say we've been working with the district for it's about 3 years now. Originally hired to work on a rate study and a financial plan, goes back a few years. We did the analysis, obviously built in costs for the redundancy project, which at the time I think was a little shy of $20 million. Just a quick side note, agencies all over California are facing project costs now that are 20-25% higher than they were a few years ago because of largely the construction bidding climate. I don't know if that's necessarily what's driving the costs here, but it's pretty common for many agencies that I've been working for. Anyway, I will give kudos to the district because I know nobody likes rate increases, but a few years ago you did adopt a four-year proposal for gradually raising rates over 4 years. They were designed to fund your operating costs as well as the district's own capital needs. The district's got a lot of aging facilities that need investment over time. I think there had been a bunch of deferred maintenance in the past. Something along those lines was my recollection. And also to put the district in position to be able to fund the redundancy project. So you've adopted 4 years of rate increases. You're, I think, going into the third year now of those rate increases. And I think they've put your finances on a much stronger footing. What will happen out of this is my guess if the project costs are $4 million, dollars higher, that would require additional financing costs. You have to borrow more. It would translate into more debt service that the district would need to pay. It doesn't mean it's going to be a huge change in the rate projections from what we saw in the past. If it's $4 million, maybe it'll be an extra dollar or two on a monthly basis. But this doesn't have to be, meaning the new rates have to kick in starting next year. We've long projected that the rates would kind of phase in over a number of years. So what it would translate to is, you know, updating the projections, looking forward and putting in the latest, greatest information, building in the latest cost estimates for the redundancy project, and determining where rates need to go, and if any action does need to happen in the near term. I know there's some other issues out there that have been, I'll just leave it at that, but I know there's some other financial questions, I think, that have been bubbling up behind the scenes, so I'm happy to entertain any questions you may have.
You don't want to answer this because I felt like you were trying to be diplomatic, but how important do you believe having the books audited so that you have an accurate picture of the district is going to affect or not affect your planning?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, normally the data we use doesn't come straight out of the audit. Sometimes we use the audits for the fund reserves because the audits boil everything down to different accounting categories that, frankly, we don't find very useful for doing the projections. But what we do like to use is the underlying actual cost data and the budget data that the district would have that feeds into the audit. So to the extent that that data is flawed, you're right, we want to make sure it's accurate. So sometimes the audits provide a check and balance on that. But as far as the information that we typically use, it's the underlying information. Just because the things get accounted for certain ways in an audit, it's not on a cash accrual basis. For example, if you look in the audit for if someone has debt service, the debt service doesn't appear as a cash expenditure. The interest does, but the principal is a reduction in long-term liability, things like that.
So
and a lot of
it's the inputs more important to you than okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I would like to suggest something, Madam Chair, that we ask Mr. Handler to discuss, and that was the concept of a separate accounting or funding identification in our district accounting that would address the question that came up about two meetings ago with how do we know that the money in the rate increase is being, I don't know if the word is protected, but certainly accounted for so that the ratepayers know that the money that they're paying extra that for the redundancies is going to the redundancies or that it will certainly be available during that time. And it's an accounting question, but it's not outrageous to ask a financial person here for an opinion. And if the board does want to ask that question, I bring that one back to you because it was of some concern to not only the board members, but there were some members of the public about two meetings ago. So.
Yes, go ahead.
Sure, fair enough.
That, please.
When the rates were adopted, the increases were needed for a number of factors. For the redundancy project was part of it. Operating cost and operating cost inflation was another part before the rates had been adopted. I think it had been about 5 years before there had been a prior rate increase. And also there needed to be more funding available for ongoing investment in the district's aging infrastructure. So the rates were needed for all of the above. And when we did our projections, we did assume there would be some cash funding towards the redundancy project for some of the soft costs, the engineering design, sometimes there's environmental reviews, things like that, that would lead up to the construction costs, which we assumed would be 100% debt finance. We did assume that as the rates were phasing in, they're generating more and more revenue each year. Some of this revenue is needed for operating costs. Some of it's needed for ongoing investment in the system and deferred maintenance, repairs, replacements. But the goal was that, over time, the rates would raise So at the end of the 4 years or soon thereafter, they'd be at an adequate place that when the debt service starts kicking in, those rates would be able to fund your operating, maintenance, capital needs, and the debt service and result in balanced budgets. The only thing I could think of, I know there was this notion of should funds be segregated aside for separate purposes. I generally don't recommend that. Normally, we like to leave that to the flexibility of the board during its budgeting process to determine where the funds need to be spent. And you never know what's going to happen. You may have plans for what you want to do in a few years, but I know even now there's some unanticipated, I think, repairs that had to happen. So it's nice to have the flexibility to do that. The only thing I can think of where you might need to have a dedicated reserve fund is if the district is able to obtain a state revolving fund loan for the redundancy project, which would be the lowest cost financing option I think you can get. It's currently about 1.7% for a 30-year financing. That financing program does require that an agency set aside 1 year of debt service into a separate, sort of segregated fund. And you have to put the money there the year the project is completed, so it serves as a debt service reserve. If you ever have a problem paying future debt service, they have the security that you've actually set 1 year aside to make sure you're making your payments, so you have a little time to work out any financial issues. So that's the only thing I can think of that we may have talked about in the past for having a separate fund specifically for the redundancy project. But a lot of these issues regarding if you want different reserve funds, where you're going to spend your money, I would defer to, you know, that's the board's policy preferences and how that would happen.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, I would remind you that part of the areas of study that Bartle Wells will be looking at is the current financial status of the funds in the bank right now and the projection. It is a financial update, so you will get a view in time that tells you whether the performance of the rates are going to be adequate as planned. Rick and I have reviewed those. We believe that we're in a pretty good position as we move forward, but we'll get an expert to confirm or tell us we got to do something different. With that, I'll shut up.
Okay.
Discussion.
Public comment, I think, now. Or do we want to discuss first?
Public comment.
Public comment, and then, yeah. Okay, let's have public comment, please.
Julie Tacker, and Cart Before the Horse is a great way to sort of characterize this. I also see a catch-22 in that in order to apply for state revolving fund or USDA funds, they're going to want to see your current financials in audited. They want them audited. I recently learned that USDA actually also wants to see your policies and procedures, and we're stalling on those. The question that I've been asking for some time relates to the continued delays associated with chasing the state revolving fund money or the USDA money. All the hoops and hurdles that you have to jump through to get the low interest money, including new NEPA requirements, new NEPA work that you're having to do, all of that slows the project down. I'd like to see a comparison with the time estimation for that time period and what that costs, including the studies and the permitting. I don't know if you realize, but your coastal development permit from the Coastal Commission expires in December. We're less than a year away. So there'll be a way to extend it, but again, more hoops and hurdles. And as long as we continue to chase the hoops and the hurdles for the low interest loan, the project price starts to climb, and the bond could be cheaper if you were jumping on it now and not having to go through the same hoops and hurdles. There are some, of course, but not
perhaps as many, and not with so much delay. If Mr. Handlers is going to be able to see the current financials, that's what we've all been asking to see also, is how much money has been generated from the rate increase, how much of that was allocated to the digester, et cetera, and not to redundancy, which the rate increase was predicated on. We haven't seen that, and I think that's the, we don't maybe need this financial analysis if we can see that number ourselves. And lastly, this is for the redundancy project only. There has not been any money raised or rate increase. Excuse me. They're having a conversation. Excuse me. Can I finish?
Finish your sentence.
The rate increase was not for reclamation. It is for redundancy only. And I think we just want to see that. We just want to see our status right now. And I don't know why it takes a consultant to show us that. Your staff should be able to show us what the current status is.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
Thank you, Colleen Kubel, Roy Grandy. I just have one question. If a couple of years ago the public was brought in and told that this money was for the redundancy, were they also told that it was going to be used for other funds also, or just the redundancy? You're saying that it can be spent somewhere else, when in fact that rate increase was just for redundancy, but it's been used for other items also, it sounds like. And so was the public brought into that? Were they told that it was going to be used for other purposes also? That's my question.
Right, Lucia Shino, is it okay to speak about the digester, the repair end of this?
Well, that's on the agenda next.
Oh, on the next one. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Anyone else for the financial plan update?
Patricia Price. The information here on table 4 and table 3, for the first two sections, 2011-12, 2012-13, they both say actual. Then you've got estimated. Then you've got budget for the next three. And we should have actual for right up until 6 months ago, I would think. So I'm wondering, are they going to work off of these figures or off of actual figures? I don't know why we have budgeted figures in here, because we should have the actual figures. They should be able to be presented. There was a lot more budgeted, I think, than was actually spent. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Is there a discussion here?
I have comments, but I don't know if you're ready for that or not.
I'm sorry?
I don't know if you're ready for that or not. Are you ready for
that? I think so, yeah. We're ready.
I was heartened to hear that he didn't think that he completely needed the audits to get the work done. But I will say that as a part of this whole process of where we're trying to go, I clearly am missing something as to why the board has not done these audits, knowing that they need to get done. And there must be something I'm missing, because I noticed that Mr. Karp hesitated when I asked that question, and I don't want to get into it, other than to say this board has to get those audits done. It's for the community's best interest. It'll stop this whole kind of back and forth that goes on. Money's missing, money's not missing. It'll really put it in black and white and show that a lot of this angst that goes out in the public is not necessary. And the longer we put off these audits, that kind of angst from the public not having a clear understanding or knowledge of what's going on in the district is going to continue. So it's my hope that when the board goes forward, at least in terms of the audit, that we keep that in mind, that that's absolutely part and parcel of what we're trying to accomplish here. They're not separate items. We have to have it done if we hope to get money in, you know, to this extent to get the redundancy process done. But given the comments by the presenter, I'm now willing to move forward and move for approval when that time comes.
Barbara, do you have any comments?
I agree with a lot of your opinion. I think one of the big problems we're having here is delays, and not enough information being disseminated to board members and board alternates. It is largely due to the fact that we have had a very inconsistent and changing leadership, which is not the fault of anybody here. So it is an ill that we have had for various and sundry reasons foisted upon us, and that we have to fix as quickly as possible. And I agree that the financial plan update is a necessary step in that, and so is pressure to complete the audit and immediately resume for the next year's 16-17 audit.
Okay, so is anyone prepared to make a motion?
I would move. I can't put anything. I got to ask the attorney a question. I can't put anything about doing the audits as part of my motion, right? Because it's not technically on the agenda.
Yeah, that's correct, but I don't think you need to give that direction to staff. They're fully aware of what the board's direction is.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I would move approval of the financial plan update.
Do you want to make it? Which option there? There's like five options. You want to go with? Specify which option.
What page is that on?
That's right, page 2 on 16.
What am I missing here?
You have. It's just. Two, you probably want to go with the option 1 is authorize the preparation of a financial plan update.
Oh, I see. Yes. That's correct.
That's the staff. You want to go with staff recommendation?
That's
okay. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Do you have a second?
I
have a second. Yep.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. Aye. Okay. All right. The next item is the consideration of a budget adjustment in support of a primary digester number 1 repair. You want to.
Thank you, directors. We have before you a report from the technical consultants. We state that the digester repair is going to run significantly over the budgeted amount of $200,000. We've recommended that the budget be increased to satisfy those requirements. And we want to allocate an additional $466,200 to the Fund 26 line that has to deal with primary digester 1 repair. The primary cost driver in this is the coating and inspection within the digester itself. If we fill the digester as it stands, there is a very good possibility of the chemistry within the digester to cause a degradation or rusting of the resteel within the walls of the within the concrete walls, and that of course is where the strength comes for the structure itself. And we're recommending that we go ahead and do that work now while it's down, get it done as quickly as we can, and that's the reason for this change. If I have any questions, I'd be happy to address them at this time.
Go ahead.
Paul, in your estimation, based on this rather substantial increase, is there some other area of the budget that has to be adjusted or adapted to? Because we're pulling this money from somewhere, so can you talk about something's got to suffer, I would assume.
Well, this is some of the negative cash flow that Mr. Handler was talking to you about. And it does give us pause, Director, that this kind of expenditure is being made, and this is the reason we asked for some additional review. Again, we feel the cash is there. You have a fairly substantial amount in the bank. What we're concerned about is that just the same thing is voiced by not only the board members but the public, that when it comes to doing the redundancy, which is something that is about 10 years late, that we'll have the money to do that also. And there will be continuing issues dealing with the maintenance of the plant over the years, and you'll get a surprise here and there. The other project that is going to be coming before you is replacement of the mixing valves. There are four of them outside the digester. And we have included that in the discussion on the table.
Yeah, I saw
it. You saw that, okay. And so we're trying to cover that one also at this time. And then we're going to be in rebudget time right away here. So we'll discuss those during the budget process.
That point, okay. That's all.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. What would be the consequences if this work was not done? What could happen?
The digester is an important function in the breaking down of the solids that are removed through the processes, and it renders the solids inert from a fecal point of view. And if we don't have a digester, which would essentially be the overall outcome over a period of years of running without the coatings on it, then we would jeopardize that. Also, if you get leaks in the walls and we start emitting gases, even if you don't have a catastrophic failure, you're going to get violations from the Air Pollution Control District. And it's just a real bad operation to be having your vessels leaking at the same time as you're trying to pump all of the fluids. You want them to be pumped one time. We don't want to run around picking them up. And that would be the outcome, and I don't mean to make light of it, but that's the overall outcome when you have a failure. And you'll have to rebuild the digester altogether.
So it costs more.
Everything seems to increase in cost over time.
Anything else? I'll go ahead and open up to public comment. Anybody have public comment on this item?
I have a suggestion. I think it would make a difference, and maybe somebody can tell me if it would or not. If the public was encouraged not to put the toilet paper in the toilet, but to put it in a basket or something, and to not put as many solids into like the toilet when they're flushing. I mean toilet paper type solids. Would that be helpful to educate the public in not putting things into the waste system that plug it up? I'm wondering if there couldn't be like a public education from each of the cities, something put out to educate them. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have a comment?
One of them third world countries encourages you to do that. And them shitholes. So anyway, Mary Lucy Oceano. So I have a few questions about the digester. So should I direct them to staff or should I direct them to the board?
Direct them to the board, please.
Okay. So staff had mentioned that it was 10 years behind. And I want to know the $15,000 piece of equipment we have for heavy solids or whatever to contain what we can't contain, right? Does that, is that associated with deferring the maintenance for 10 years? Would that $15,000 expense be there had we not deferred the maintenance? Because obviously the maintenance has been deferred for 10 years. I mean, we can't dispute that, right? And the more it was deferred, the worse it got, and the more it became costly to the people. So can you maybe explain to us how our equipment, with all the money that local people from AG, Grover Beach, and Oceano put their money into, could allow for such an important piece of equipment to get this deteriorated? What would cause
it? System? Is that what you're, what are you talking about?
Pardon me?
What's the equipment you're talking about, the $15,000 piece of equipment?
The overflow, hold the biosolids compartment over there, which they did not, Mr. Carpet mentioned that they did not anticipate the digester being that full. So would we have to keep it longer, which I suspect we would have to keep it longer, and had the maintenance been properly done, which now I hope it's in the policies and procedures on how to run a plant, that it never happens again. I want to know if this additional $15,000 a month is because of deferred maintenance. So if you could answer that for me, and really just the down and dirty, how does something get this wrecked, this destroyed? Because it's a sewer plant. We know they're high maintenance. We need to keep them clean. As clean as possible, because they're expensive to replace. But I support the expense, but I don't know how we got here.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I do know how we got here. I've been coming to these meetings since 2008, and I have a grasp of what goes on at the plant. I know that the overall project to rehab the digester was budgeted for 2015-16, and Mr. Huebner took that out of the budget, and that budget was approved by a board that included Mary Lucy. So because it wasn't budgeted for, and when Mr. Clemens was put on leave, no one was babysitting the digester, and then the digester began to sort of fail. But the real reason why not to have done the digester sooner was that we had very expensive, important projects, the grit removal system and the bar screen, that we wanted to get done ahead of that, so that when you run the material to the digester, that it was higher quality, so that the digester wouldn't have to work so hard, and you wouldn't want the dirtier material in there ahead of these screening processes that were put in and make for higher quality. So it was delayed on purpose. We knew that because we wanted bar screen and grit removal before the digester. And now the digester's getting done. It only got done because its management after Mr. Clemens was on leave. Mary's talking about the rented centrifuge, the $15,000 piece of equipment that she referred to. That's what she's talking about. And we might need it longer. I look at this, yes, it's very expensive and that's unfortunate, but I look at this as an opportunity to put that piece of equipment into tip-top shape. I'm actually surprised that it wasn't in worse shape from the studies that were done on it. So
I'll just piggyback on to something that Patricia said, and Linda, you agreed a few months ago about the newsletter having more education in it,
yes,
about what you do and don't put down your sewer. And if you put toilet paper down, there's a screen that takes all that off, and then it has to be sanitized and thrown in the dump. So as little toilet paper as possible is a good recommendation. But, you know, if you don't have to throw it down the toilet or down the drain, don't. Use your garbage.
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon, off point for 20 seconds. I'd like to encourage the public to please be quiet when they're not speaking, and also for the public to think before they speak. Some of the language up here is unacceptable.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Any more discussion here?
Well, just for a little more clarity for the public, Paul, can you repeat the question or the response I think that you gave to Barbara about this piece of equipment and why it's being used? Just once again, just tell us again.
The digester is a large vessel that degrades solids removed from the wastewater into a state of inert composition. The digester behaves much like a digestive system within the human body. It likes to run at about 90 degrees, 80 to 90 degrees, and it breaks down solids just like your digestive system does in your body. And I don't want to carry this on too far, but it's the job of the wastewater plant to take care of all of those things. And we don't believe that 2 years of additional maintenance has caused this problem. This is a digester that's been around since 1965. It did get recoated back about 10 years ago, and it needs to be recoated again. This is a consumable, if you will, just like changing tires or changing bearings in a pump. We need to do it. And the other thing with regard to these centrifuge, when we clean the digester again, we will probably rent a centrifuge because we don't want to burn up the operational centrifuge, the one we run all the time to help us move solids around during that process, because it's such a huge amount of wear when you're cleaning a digester. When we get the two projects that were mentioned by one of the public today, when those things are operating on a regular basis, it will certainly help. And with that, have I answered the question?
Very much. I just was trying to give the public some clarity. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The importance of the digester working correctly. Okay, so with all that, if we can get a motion, does someone want to make a motion to consider it? Consider the budget adjustment support?
I move that the board adopt resolution number 2018-385, allocating an additional $466,200 to Fund 26, line item 2017B1-07, entitled Primary Digester Number 1 Repair.
Second.
Okay, and we'll do a roll call vote, please.
Director Brown?
Yes.
Director Nichols?
Yes.
Chair Austin?
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you. Okay. Our next, the technical consultants and the plant operators report.
Yes, we have before you the technical report. This is a regular report to you to be filed. If you have questions, I'd be happy to address them. Again, we identify the new items in italics, so there is not a terrible amount to review, but I'm here at your request.
Is there any discussion on that now, no. Or do you want to just open public comment? Ready for public comment?
No questions.
Is there any public comment on the plant operator's report?
Julie Tacker, and I just wanted to point out a couple of things. And I mentioned this before when we talked about the financial report. USDA, again, I just learned that USDA is going to want your policies and procedures manual. And I don't know that you want to give them the last adopted one, or if you want to get to work on what I thought was going to be on tonight's agenda. Was supposed to be a couple of chapters, and they're not here. The makeup of the alternates is probably good. They're not here. We'll have the regular board members pursue that. One of the things that concerned me was the notion that Pismo Beach is considering preparing a memorandum of understanding for the district's consideration to reserve space at the district's plant for the Regional Groundwater Sustainable Project. I think there needs to be a big conversation about this. There's not a lot of room on that property. There was a lot of consternation over even allowing the redundancy project on that property. It seems to me that if you all invest in a sustainable groundwater project, recycling of water, that you would not put that very expensive component in a vulnerable place, which is where the sanitation district is, that you would want to move that cross Highway 1 somewhere out of the coastal zone so that they don't have to approve it, but also to protect it from sea level rise and flooding. On page 4, there's a discussion about the brine disposal and the district's NPDES permit. It says here that we wouldn't get, the public wouldn't get to review the RWQCB's permit, not likely before late 2017. Well, we're in early 18, so I take it that that's not available. But one thing that, a question that was asked at the last board meeting and I never heard the answer to is, what is your daily limit for the brine? And I think it's 50,000 gallons a day, but I can't find it in the permit. And that's my oversight. I'm sure it's in there. But I would like to know, if it's 50,000 gallons a day, is it likely that that number will go up in your new permit? Because there is more demand for more people, for more users for brine, or will that number maybe go down as it is environmentally damaging to continue to dump the brine waste into the ocean? Thank you very much. Oh, last question. The recruitment of a district administrator, I would like to know where we can see the advertisement. I know your board went over the brochure, and I'd like to see the final outcome of that, and then where is it posted so that someone could apply? Because you've got TV time right now. You could be advertising for the perfect administrator. Thanks.
Anyone else? Do we have an advertisement? Is there an advertisement out?
If we don't, we will soon. I had that same question today, and I was, and one of our staff members is following up with the consultant. I'm sorry, I don't have that information for you today.
What is the, is it 50,000, the intake of the brine, the daily intake?
To
brine?
My knowledge, the permit doesn't speak to a limit on the
doesn't
brine.
Doesn't give a limit?
And that's one of the issues we expect to be covered under the new permit when we get it.
Do you know when we're going to get it?
No, it's the Regional Water Board is backed up with a lot of these permits throughout the state, and we're one of those in the queue. It's supposed to be updated every 5 years, but It's going to be some time.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and so we know that everyone has a copy of the bylaws, and we'll be have them on the next agenda next month, so you can...
I have a question of, or a comment to legal staff.
Okay, go ahead.
About that. There was a discussion earlier about the conflict of interest, 500 feet. Somebody brought that up. And it's my understanding that's kind of an outdated...
And it doesn't apply. I know what she's talking about. I'm way over 500 feet.
Well, that's not why I brought it up. But
you're going to bring your tape measure over to the
no, that's
levy?
No, that's not why I brought it up, ma'am. Just let me finish. We had a conflict of interest discussion at the city of Arroyo Grande, and I learned on a particular issue that we were dealing with that there's actually a 12-point process, that legal standards. So all I'm trying to say is I think it's probably should be looked at as to whether your discussion of the 500-foot rule even is an accurate description of the current law, because of my understanding, it's more complicated than just 500 feet. I mean, and the only reason I comment on that is I won't be here next week, and that was news to me, because I've always used 500 feet as the standard, and then I learned, well, no. Rules have changed, and they look at things a little differently now based on case law. So can you comment on that?
Certainly. There is a process that's put out by the FPPC on a step-by-step approach to analyze conflict of interest issues. And I believe it's 12 steps, maybe more steps to it. I haven't looked at it for a while. Typically for a jurisdiction such as this, which is vastly different than a city or a community services district, the issues of a conflict of interest don't usually arise because the decisions you're making affect everyone in the same manner.
Right. Okay. So you don't need that multi-pronged approach based on that.
I have not seen an instance where we would have to do that analysis in the past 2 years since I've been here.
Okay. Thank you for that.
With the conflict of interest, is it property that is inside the district or outside the district? If, you know, the district you sit on is if you own property within 500 feet inside the district, but if you happen to own property that's not in the district, then you're okay, right? But even
correct. It addresses property that you own. Could be in the district or in any of the three jurisdictions in the district that would could be affected. And you can never say never, so if there's a certain project in the sanitation district that would have a financial effect on one piece of property, then we'd have to do that analysis.
Yeah, well, it doesn't apply. Thank you. Okay, so I think with that, we go to closed session. Any public comment on closed session?
Julie Tacker and I actually had hoped that we would have some discussion about the bylaws so that you guys could kind of work on those or cook those over the next 2 weeks. But that's all right. I'll just save my notes. With regard to the closed session, I would just ask if there is any claim or written material that the public can have access to that would enlighten us to the anticipated litigation, significant exposure that you're going to discuss in closed session.
Anyone else? Okay. If there's no one else, then we're going to adjourn to closed session.
To confer with legal counsel under the anticipated litigation provision of the Brown Act. Thank you.